Thanks, Mark. You just want to pop that first screen up for me? Just want to entitle this to glory. It was a couple of weeks ago we looked at Luke chapter 9, where Jesus resolutely, do you remember what it said about that verse, resolutely? It meant that he fixed his face toward Jerusalem, and he was heading there, and he was blinkered. He wasn't going to go to the right or to the left. He was going to go to Jerusalem, and nothing would stop him. All the synoptic gospel writers, that is Matthew, Mark, and Luke, follow the story of the transfiguration of Christ with another story, the healing of the desperately ill boy who had an evil spirit. And so while the glory mountain exposes the radiance of Jesus in all his glory, it serves to remind us that immediately after the high points of life, there's always something goes wrong. Isn't that true? You know, we're on the Mount of Transfiguration, we're raising our hands together, we're singing, we're worshiping, we're so happy, and the next day, there's something happens that's just incredibly awful. And these things, for some people, spoil their faith. And people ask questions like, well, you know, we're tempted with all these things. How can God be in control if he lets these things happen? There is a key event in the life of Jesus. And it's this particular one, this where we see the radiance and glory of Jesus Christ. And it's just like the temptation of Jesus in the desert, also a key event in the Gospels. And that was a difficult period for him. I think if any of us are in a desert wilderness setting for 40 days and 40 nights and we haven't eaten for a while and the devil's tempting us, it's a pretty difficult time. But that signified the beginning of his ministry. It was like a turning point where he stops being a carpenter and he turns to being an itinerant rabbi, and what a rabbi he turned out to be. The starting block, so to speak, of his ministry was his baptism, followed immediately by the 40 days in the wilderness. Satan is good at doing his job. He tempted Jesus. You can be sure he'll tempt you and me as well. He does tempt us. And then he comes along to us and he condemns us for being tempted. And we feel really bad that we have been tempted. We almost feel like we're sinful because we've been tempted, but temptation isn't a sin. It was a commentator, George Eldon Ladd, I remember reading this a long, long time ago, years ago. He really specialized in the Gospel of John. And you got this great quote from him. And he says, John, the Gospel writer of John, is different from the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, in making the entire ministry of Jesus a manifestation of his glory. In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you tend to think, well, the manifestation of his glory is up on the mountain, where they saw him as he really was. His garments are white, and he's really, his flesh transformed. He looks as bright as the sun, and it's just, this is amazing. We don't want to ever go anywhere else. But this commentator, I got it right. All of the ministry of Jesus was about glory. And that being the case, it means that his glory is not just for the mountaintop experiences we have. One of the things as a pastor, and even before I became a pastor, one thing I always loved to do was to go to our district assembly. Some people here have been there before, and it's always such a good time. It really is. And we're sort of like, the worship times were way up here. It's just amazing. We had a band playing. Now, they weren't the best band, but they made up for it with their enthusiasm. They were just, it was amazing. It was a Portuguese band. Portuguese speaking. Well, really, that's what I want to look at this morning. This is an incredible gem of realization about Jesus. His whole ministry was about glory. And if we see glory as only relating to the wow moments of life, or those important platform moments in our ministry or the ministry of other people, or where we have been maybe to a convention or maybe a week-long conference or something like that, that when we come down the mountain, we come down with a thump and we're deflated. And when we come down the mountain, it's like, here's some situations. When you no longer hold the status that you once did, you've just come down the mountain. When you're getting older, and you're thinking about retiring, come down the mountain. When you're no longer in the driving seat, literally, someone had to hand over their keys, they can't drive anymore, you come down to earth with a thud. When you think that to see the best days, you've got to look back. Have you had to look back recently? The good old days. Why are the good days always old? Why do we always think we've got to look back to see the good old days? If you're over whatever age this morning, look forward. Look forward, because you can have just as many good days in that direction as you had in that direction. And the older I get, the more I want to believe that. Did Jesus look back with yearning to that glory event on the mountain, probably Mount Hermon, and wish he was still there? So I just want to hold on that word for a moment. The mountain. The mountain. Just want to take that word from verse 2 in a reading. Here it is here. After 6 days, talk about that little phrase in a moment. After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up a high mountain where they were all alone, and there Jesus was transfigured before them, and they didn't want to leave that mountaintop. Last week, various people were taking part in testimonies. Diane came to the front and she brought a book. Love reading this book. Hinds Feet in High Places. And it's all about the mountain. It's all about the mountain experiences. And it's a great book, and I don't want to take anything from that. But it's about the mountain. Famous speech by Martin Luther King Jr. on the 3rd of April 1968, Tennessee, the evening before he was assassinated, included these words. Now, if you really want to know what this sounds like, you've got to go on YouTube and type it in, and you'll hear the accent and drawl and everything else, which is just amazing. But let me just read with my Irish accent. It doesn't work, but here we go. "Well, I don't know what will happen now," he said. "We've got some difficult days ahead, but it doesn't really matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. I've seen the promised land. I'm so happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man because my eyes have seen the glory, the coming of the Lord." And the next day, he was shot dead. And there are what seems to be mere casual words in verse 2, where it says, after 6 days. And those words recall, for many students, another mountaintop experience in the Old Testament. This time, Moses on Mount Sinai. And here's the verse. "And the glory of the Lord settled on Mount Sinai for 6 days." Same word. "For 6 days, the cloud covered the mountain. And on the seventh day, the Lord called to Moses within the cloud." And so Paul, just to move on quickly and try and get all these bits of input from lots of really good sources, Paul in Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 3, he writes about the glory of the new covenant. And in that passage, Paul notes how when Moses had been up there in the presence of God, his face was shining with it was a Shekinah, the glory of God. His face was radiant. So when Moses comes down the mountain, we've all got to come down the mountain. When he came down the mountain where the ordinary people were, he covers his face with a veil. And this is where the ordinary people were, of course. And so we ask, why did he cover his face? Was it because he didn't want people to see his radiance and maybe feel embarrassed that they didn't have any? No. The real reason was that the people wouldn't be able to see his fading glory. He was embarrassed that it was getting less and less by the moment. And Paul, in all honesty, goes on to write, he goes on to say that all glory is fading glory compared to the surpassing glory that we find in Christ Jesus. Now, if we were to stop there and just take that line and you take it home with you, you're taking something really important with you. But we're not going to stop there. I don't have much more to say, but we're not going to stop there. Whether it is Jesus standing on top of a mountain or nailed to a cross on Calvary, it's glory. It's glory. And I love the way Paul writes about us having this treasure in, second thing I want to say here, take it from Paul's writings, jars of clay. He says we have this treasure, this glory in jars of clay. And that is what we are. Clay is made from dust, and I want to go back to being dust again. Sorry if it's bad news, but it's true. But not yet. And to be honest, you know, in many clay pots, there are chips and cracks, and some of us have more cracks than others. What happens with the cracked jars in the house, Ingrid? When there's a cup and a crack in it, what happens to it? Pardon? Say it again. They get binned. In the bin. It's got a crack. We're not using that anymore for tea and coffee. In the bin. But that depends. Depends what it is. Apparently, Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa now has many cracks in the paintwork. No one's throwing that one out. You can buy a perfect copy of the Mona Lisa without the cracks to hang on your wall. But if you want the cracks, trust me on this, you've got to pay extra money to have them put in to make it look so genuine. Cracks and all, and you'll hang it up. It's exactly like the original painting, cracks and all. Not everything with a few cracks is worthless and ready for the bin. And some of you will appreciate me saying that very much. You're of great worth and great value to God because, in spite of your imperfections, because we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this, what kind of glory, this all-surpassing glory is from God and not from us. And it concludes by calling it an special glory. It's an eternal glory. It's an eternal glory that will not fade away, not pass away. It's going to be there forever and ever and ever. And then finally, what I learned from this passage. Only Jesus. I love the declaration here in Mark 9, verse 7 to 8. This is how Mark records these words. Then a cloud appeared and enveloped them, and a voice came from the cloud. This is my son whom I love. Listen to him. Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one else except Jesus only. Jesus only. It was almost as if their hearts sank because the glory had disappeared. But no, Jesus was there with them. And it seems that this wonderful moment of radiance had gone. Their utopia, as they thought it believed it to be had vanished, and all they were left with was Jesus. And there are many times in our experience when all the props are gone and all the supports we have taken away, and you know, and all we've got to trust on is Jesus. And the words, of course, were still ringing in their ears at that point. What words? These words. "This is my son, whom I love. With you I'm well pleased." Those words were ringing. "This is my son, whom I love. Listen to him." It was a memory from another occasion a couple of years before at his baptism. As he came out of the water, the words rang out from heaven, "You are my son whom I love, with you I'm well pleased." And when Jesus was crucified, Pilate had the words written on a piece of wood above the cross. Sometimes you go into a church and you see four letters. I-R-N-I. You know those words stand for? It's the first letter of those four words, key words, that were written above the cross. Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. So voices from heaven and voices from earth were all saying the same thing. He is the King. He is the King. Jesus of Nazareth, him alone. And at that point he was on the cross. And there was this wonderful, unique moment of glory like no other. And all the angels that couldn't be seen, but they were watching from the side and from above and from over this side. And people were saying, "Oh, he shouldn't have done it. He should have listened." And thought that was the disciples thought that was the end of him. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. And because it's his glory, you see, the third day transformed that brokenness into glory. And because it is his glory, then by faith it is also our glory. And when everything else is stripped away and there's nothing else but Jesus, he is enough. He is enough. He is all that we need. And our closing song strips away everything else this morning and leaves us only with Jesus, because only in Jesus can we find true glory.